Welcome to the Practice Podcast, a show created by lawyers to help lawyers in life and business without all the complicated lawyer language. Let's welcome Bast Amron founders and your hosts, Jeff Bast and Brett Amron.
Did you have an extra cup of coffee today?
Well, I'm having one right now because I have a science fair I have to get to.
All right. He's got the science fair.
I got a late night. I had an early morning.
We're recording this at 2:48 p.m. Let the record note that Brett will not sleep well tonight. Lauren, I'm sorry. I tried to control him, but
I'll just go run some more miles.
Brett, if you were not a lawyer, what would you be?
A park ranger.
Nice. That's a good answer. It's like he was ready for that. Didn't even have to think about it.
Yeah, be out in the mountains somewhere, keeping the trails clean.
Do you have a park that you'd want to work at, or you want to roam from park to park?
I could be a roaming park ranger.
I don't know if that exists.
I don't think that exists.
But I like it.
But yeah, how about you, Jeff? What would you be?
I think marine biologist.
That's too hard.
Something with the ocean.
That's too hard.
Yeah, I know. But I'm not going to school for this. I'm just taking the job.
This
hypothetical, we're not like starting over.
We're
just in this job.
Right? I see. You're just going to slot right in there, the marine biologist. So you just sort of downgraded all the marine biologists. Like, I can just, because of my life, jump in and be a marine biologist.
Yeah. I don't think you just show up at Yosemite with a hat and say, yeah, I'm a park ranger either.
So. No, there's some training involved for sure. So. And I would gladly take that training so I could be outside.
I'm with you.
In the mountains.
One if by land, two if by sea.
Maybe we should ask our guest that question too.
Do you want to chime in? Special guest? Everyone knows who you are.
All our guests are special.
They're listening.
I mean, you know, you're extra.
To the episode because they saw who it is.
Well, thanks for having me. I'd go actor.
Oh. Actor. Nice.
Oh my
film.
God.
Film.
Film
only.
Only film.
Okay. Maybe I'd do a series here and there, but I'd like to stick with the film.
Okay. Any particular genre?
I would be a diverse actor with a lot of range.
I feel like Shakespeare.
Nudity? Would you go nudity?
Full frontal.
Full frontal.
If the money's right.
This podcast is going off the rails quickly.
You would have to consider, but then you could be a park ranger. You could be a marine biologist. You could do whatever you want. Yeah.
So the money. Being an actor.
Yes. Yeah. You could do it all.
Our guest today is Carlo Rodriguez.
That's a great segue.
Transitioning.
Just hurry up.
We have a show to do here, guys. Come on. Did you want to flesh out the acting career?
Well, we'll get there.
We'll come back.
We're going to come back to that.
Carlo is the managing director of electric vehicles, also known as EVs. There's a lot of acronyms, so I'm going to cover them all in the beginning. I hope you remember them.
We're going to put a legend in the show notes.
He's the managing director of EVs and Advanced Vehicle Technology, or AVT. At Ryder System Inc., which is traded on the New York Stock Exchange, has R.
RSI.
Old just school.
R. Just R.
Just R.
Boom. You know that your company's big time. It's one letter. Boom.
90
R.
years in the business.
Amazing.
90. Wow.
Anyway, in this role, Carlo is responsible for leading all areas of EVs and AVT, including electrification, advisory services, leasing and renting, charging and infrastructure, maintenance, telematics, and onboard technology. He began his career at Ryder 17 years ago as an in-house attorney.
When he was 18.
Right, exactly. And after a decade in the law department, he joined Ryder's internal clients on the business side and product management. And since then, he's held a variety of positions of increasing responsibility for several product lines in the Ryder business. Prior to Ryder, he was an account executive at Paramount Pictures.
There's the connection. There it is.
And then he practiced law at a prestigious firm called Hunton in Miami,
I met Jeff.
Yes, we met. He is a double Gator, undergrad and law.
Go Gators.
Let's go.
And he's also active in the South Florida community. He serves on the board of History Miami Museum. He's a leadership donor for United Way Miami, and he was recognized as the 40 under 40 outstanding lawyers of Miami, and his greatest accomplishment, a proud father of two daughters. Welcome, Carlo.
Welcome, Carlo.
Thank you for that intro.
Any clarifications you need to make on intro?
I'm at the point where my experience actually exceeds my knowledge and my value.
Oh man, I passed that years ago.
I think we all get there at some point, but thanks for the intro. Happy to be here.
Let's start at Paramount Pictures since we were already talking about acting. What'd you do at Paramount Pictures? You were an account executive.
Yeah, so at UF, found out an alum was going to be in town for an advisory council meeting and was dedicating some time after hours to go over resumes and meet with students. So I took advantage of that. I don't think a lot of students did, but I went with my resume. He critiqued it. I sent it back. I let him know that I had applied for law school. But at the time, Florida, and I don't know if Florida still does this, but they had spring entrance. So I was graduating in May, traditional graduation, but I wasn't starting law school until January. And I had applied. I wasn't even accepted yet. So I asked if I could do an internship that I saw some online at Paramount Pictures. And he wrote back and said, no internships, but I'd like you to fly out and meet me, I think at DFW Airport. There's a position I want you to interview for. It was an account executive sales position. So I was kind of stuttering, wasn't ready for all that. I just went through that process and was up against some seasoned sales executives, but I had this coach kind of in my court that went to UF. Yeah,
he liked you.
Kind of helping me. He liked me. He mentored me and just went to two different airports, met him in DFW, met another regional president in Maryland, Baltimore, I think it was, then met the president of Paramount TV in Hollywood with the studio. You know, you go through the Paramount gates, like his office was there, and that did well. So some people think I look young now. Back then, this was
a long time ago.
This was 24 years ago. And the biggest kind of, I guess, concern the president had to the UF alum was, this guy's going to be talking to general managers of stations in these markets, and he looks like he's 18. How's he going to do it?
He's 19. Yeah.
So I got over that and I did well. I worked out of the DFW Southwest Regional Office. I set a few records. One record was like selling Montel Williams in some small market in Mississippi, and did that before law school.
That's cool. So you were selling shows to regional TV networks or to TV?
Yeah. So think about, you come into a market like Miami, which wasn't me because I had from 100 or 95 down in the Nielsen rating. So I had 95 to 200.
Those markets.
Laredo, Texas, and El Paso, Texas was my biggest market. I think it was 95.
By the way, Nielsen we like rating. Laredo and El Paso.
Yeah. So we're just love it.
Small TV markets, right?
Yeah. I would go into a market like that and I'd meet with the ABC affiliate, NBC affiliate. Some of the markets only had one or two. Right. And I would sell first run syndicated shows off network. So Entertainment Tonight, Judge Brown, Judge Judy, so those types of things.
In that day and age, you're not turning your laptop around and showing them a show. It was the old fashioned way, huh?
Yeah, it was the old fashioned. And you would study the ratings and see what the show was doing in similar markets.
Uh-huh.
And you would say, look, with your demographics and in this time slot, it could do well. Cool. And sometimes the show was up for renewal and you were showing what the market was doing on a competitor station and try to sell that.
So obviously you got into law school.
Did you start law school
in January as planned, or did you take more time with this?
Yeah. So
they didn't care about that? They weren't?
I just told them I got accepted and really wanted to get more education, and they understood and just made that tough decision to leave. It was a really good job. So imagine I'm in undergrad and they're saying, your first job out of a college of journalism and communication and what you're studying is going to be working at a station, small market, making $18,000 a year. And all of a sudden at Paramount, right out of the gate with bonus, I was making $85,000 annually at, this is 2000, right? So that was hard to leave. And we had a lot of perks. We had car service. So sometimes the sedan wasn't available. I get picked up in limos. My mom visited me once in Dallas and my mom's like comes outside in a white limo picking me up. It was nice. The budget was good for expenses, but I figured with law, I could go anywhere. I could work anywhere. I wasn't just forced to be in Dallas or Chicago. So I went to law school in January and started at UF.
What skill set from your stint at Paramount do you still use today?
The sales aspect, finding the value prop in what you're selling and presenting that to customers and understanding that they're reaching out to you because they need something that's going to solve one of their problems. So I think that's important. And the traveling and time management, meeting with different clients, understanding their business, understanding the audience. I think those were all valuable lessons, but it was a short stint. It was seven, eight months.
You probably learned more in those 7 or 8 months than the 19 or 20 years before that.
Yeah, for sure. It was a big learning experience.
That's cool. So law school and then straight out of law school to Hunton?
Yeah, both of my summers at Hunton and Williams.
I don't think I've ever heard of that firm.
No, you haven't. Probably.
It's never mentioned around here.
Oh, I know. We need to stop promoting. No, it's a great firm.
This is like the alumni network here on our podcast. Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead. Tell us about your time at Hunton.
Yeah. So Hunton started at Hunton, met Jeff, worked in litigation actually. Started in litigation, thought because of my background, at Paramount, but more so I had also a theater background. So
communications.
I had theater, a scholarship for acting in theater. So one of my mentors, that mentor in Paramount said, you need to pick litigation as your practice area. Sure. You need the mic.
A little performance based,
but
yeah.
Little did we know that it's not a lot of mic time, right? You're not going not to a lot court of stage a time, lot. Right? And it's not staged and it's not like in the movies. So if I could go back, I'd probably pick real estate, given the market we're in and some of the contacts that I have in real estate and seeing what some of these developers are doing. So I did commercial litigation with Sam Dannon and some of those folks over there.
But then ultimately you made the move. You left to go in-house. Tell us about that decision, because there are probably some lawyers out there who are thinking about life in-house.
Yeah. Wasn't searching, but the opportunity opened at Ryder for an in-house position, and it was a transactional corporate position. So I had met the deputy general counsel at a fundraiser charity golf tournament. So I had that kind of intro or connection already. Started interviewing for the job, and I liked the opportunity for a few reasons. One, I wasn't sure at the time if I was in the right practice area in litigation. So that was a factor. This was a corporate transactional opportunity. There's not a lot of Fortune 500 companies based out of Miami or South Florida. The pay was well, it wasn't too far from a commute perspective, and the people that I interviewed were solid. It was a early part of my career and decided to take a shot at it and took the job.
So the transition though, taking a step back, first of all, you mentioned that you had a scholarship for acting.
Yes.
Yeah, I like that.
Did you have a dual major? I presume the scholarship was to the University of Florida.
It was not. It was at Indian River College, my first two years of college.
Or at Indian River. Okay.
Yes.
And for those listening that don't know where that is.
It's in Fort Pierce.
Okay.
I started college just taking a couple of courses. I was trying to ease into it. And I didn't have,
I'm
the first, besides my stepdad, I'm the first to go to college and graduate in my family. I wasn't focused on that college track. So I took a couple classes. One of them was a theater class, acting class. And the first day of class, we had to do some monologue or presentation. And the professor, who happened to be the director of the whole entire fine arts program, said, do you have a scholarship? And, you know, I was very young, teenager at the time. And I go, no, but I should have one. And he goes, I think you should. Me and my wife, she's the guidance counselor, and meter, I need you to go to at least 12 credits full-time, 12 to 15, and I'd like you to have an acting scholarship. You have to do one play a semester for your 2 years, and first semester, I was in a scholarship position. I did four plays. I think two of them I was a lead in, and I had done a little bit of this in high school, so it was a great experience. But to continue, when I got to UF, I was concerned about paying the bills in the future and being able to provide for my family. And I was doing what I wasn't supposed to be doing. I was supposed to be more courageous and just go for it and jump in with both feet and go all the way with theater and acting and move to LA or New York. But I decided to do College of Journalism and Communication so I would have a degree in something. The problem is when you do that, it's hard. When you're not jumping in with both feet and going all in, it's hard to get back into it. It's hard to push yourself late night or over the weekends to go audition at local theater or graduate and then pivot completely and move.
Do you ever think about getting into acting as a side gig, right? Obviously, you have your position at Ryder, but something to get back into local theater or anything like that here?
No, not right now. What I've done is I've done Ryder headquarters is here in Miami. So they do big United Way campaign weeks and they'll have different events. Take your kid to work day. Over the years, I've been able to enter like a fun talent competition or MC, and I've done stand-up comedy a couple times. That has led to other opportunities where United Way has been in the audience and they've invited me to do their annual event. So I came to the Hyatt 1 year and did stand-up comedy for their campaign event. So I've done little things like that. My next big goal is to do an open mic stand-up comedy.
Where can you do that?
Can you let us know so we can?
Yeah, yeah. Please let us know.
Yeah, I'd love
to
go.
But where can you do that down here? There used to be one in Coconut Grove. There used to be a
now it's in Doral City Center, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
Improv.
Oh, the improv is there now. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. All right, so there's still an interest and you're going to do it at some point.
Give us a joke or something.
Your opening joke.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not ready.
I'm glad you asked that question. It was in my head. I was like, I should ask.
So far, he hasn't been that funny so far.
I find him hilarious. So
it was very funny before we started.
All right, so let's get on track and go to first of all, I do believe that you were super courageous when you decided to go for it on Paramount. I mean, that's pretty courageous, taking a flight, go to DFW on a whim, and then all of a sudden you have this position. Kudos to you and for taking that chance.
Even showing up that day when that gentleman was visiting campus and you showed up with your resume.
Yeah. That's right, a lesson for young people, right?
They were at happy hour, college students on a Thursday. They were out, you know, partying and starting their pre-game.
And you were out there dusting off your resume.
The resume critique.
Right. That's a lesson
seizing an opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. Yeah.
And that's something you saw like on a message board or something that this guy's going to be here. Like
a professor announced it. So back then there was no social media. Yeah, yeah. So it was a professor saying it and you had to take the note. Which
write
is something
it down and actually,
Marty Steinberg taught me, like always be taking notes, right? Yeah. So take the note and then follow through and come back for it. So I'm glad I did that. That was great.
Yeah, what a great experience. So then Ryder, right? So you get to Ryder in-house, but at some point you want to transition out. Tell us about that. Why and where that led you to?
So 11 years in-house supporting everything in fleet management solutions. So lease agreements, long-term agreements, short-term agreements, supplier agreements, and then supporting marketing campaigns, supporting finance, lease finance products. Also counsel for our UK business when there was a time period where we lost our UK attorney. So supporting that business and learning some of the different laws and different practices. Also got a chance to go to South America when we operated there in Brazil. And there was a chance where I almost was the expat attorney over there, but then we decided to cease operations. So that never materialized, but did a lot of stuff transactionally and then still got to do some dispute matters with mediation and some litigation with some government agencies and used my litigation background. So loved it. And during that 11-year period, was approached a few times to maybe go to the business side, but never acted on it. And then eventually one of the clients at that 11-year mark had a position in product management and wasn't wanting to get out, but thought it was a great opportunity, really liked this manager that was my boss. I liked his SVP, thought it was a great opportunity and just did it. And it was tough because you invest so much in law school and your legal career and at the law firm in-house. And it's a tough decision, but I thought it would be more fun, more exciting, a new challenge. And we've had some instances of people doing that within Ryder. And I saw in other in-house departments, other companies where they've had a GC or an attorney go out and have a lot of success. Mm-hmm. So I did that and I did product management. And then the last 2 years now, so it's been about 6 to 7 years on the business side. The last 2 years, I've been in this EV new product role.
Right. So we'll get to that. To say that you seize opportunity and seize the day is an understatement. It seems like that's something that you've done
throughout
your career. Is that something you've learned or observed? Like nurture nature. Is like which family, do you think? Yeah. What do you think it is?
Look, bouncing those types of things around with your mentors or family or friends and just trying to get to the right answer of what to do. And I think it's building relationships and making sure you're walking around the halls and doing those types of things and networking and going to events and going to receptions. And I think all those relationships help really put you in spots where at least you're getting opportunities and you're getting offers to pivot or have some new challenges.
Yeah. Super impressive.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned as part of that mentors, but it sounds to me like you sort of created mentoring relationships yourself. Like you were active.
Yeah.
You met the gentleman, gave him his resume, and then stayed in touch with him, which is not always that easy back in those days.
Yeah.
You've gone from legal to business. You met somebody from Ryder when you were playing golf.
Yeah.
It sounds like you have created those opportunities and then seized them when they were available.
Yeah, definitely. And what's great now is paying it forward. And even early in my career, I would critique other people's resumes and I would volunteer and people would sometimes like, this is weird. Like you want to critique my resume? From that day where he critiqued mine and then just trying to study that art. And sometimes you're looking at something for so long that just having a second set of eyes, even if they're not an expert, helps a lot. So I've tried to pay that forward and tried to connect people in different industries or in different circles to pay some of that forward.
That's great. And I think it's a great lesson. And we've talked about this on this show is as a general proposition, people want to help.
Yeah.
And if you ask for help, you usually will get it. And yes, there's nothing wrong with asking for help. And I love that you appreciate those who helped you along the way and that you're willing to do it for others. I think Brett and I are both the same way. Like when somebody asked me, can you look at this guy who's in law school? I get this all the time from family friends who met somebody at dinner and their son is in law school. And it's like, hey, you met these people at dinner. Now I'm interviewing them. We're not hiring. But if they would find it beneficial, I'm happy to meet with them for coffee, look at their resume and talk to them. I've had a few say, no, no thanks, because they don't want that meeting, which I think is a tragic mistake.
Yeah.
But most people, I'm happy to meet with them because I remember people did that for me when I was coming out.
As a quick story, I was asked by a then client, a guy that I met, to speak to a kid who was starting law school at University of Miami, who interned when he was in college for this individual, was in-house counsel for a company up in New Jersey. And I said, sure, happy to do it. So I met the kid, whatever. He graduated. We weren't looking, so he didn't come to our firm. He went to a different firm. And then we were looking about a year later, and guess what? He's here.
He works here now.
Excellent. Yeah. Yeah, you can't say no to those opportunities,
you know?
I think when you're young, you think, oh, it's got to happen now. And you feel like everything's now. But if you nurture some of these relationships and keep networking, you're going to need that network 4 years from now, 10 years from now.
Yeah. The worst thing is you meet somebody. Yeah. Like that's the worst thing that's going to happen. Exactly. You know?
And it doesn't lead to a job or something.
Right.
You met a person.
But you met somebody. Right. So you never know what's going to happen from there. I agree. I tell my kids all the time, take the meeting, take the call, connect by email, by whatever. Doesn't matter.
I think this is going to lead to a lot of LinkedIn messages.
This one? This episode?
Meeting requests.
Just DM and then you'll be happy to DM back.
Yes.
Yeah. You're going to get some meeting requests from Hannah Bast, Micah Bast, Max Bast, you know, Danny Amron, Dylan Amron, right. Hayden, right? As if they were listening to this episode. Come on.
They better be.
Just
they
will this be. Episode. Meaning they listen to all the others.
A joke because then
now
a
you're,
joke.
Are
a
you regretting that question? You know what? There's still time. We have a few
priest,
left
a so. Rabbi. And, no, I'm just kidding. What else we got?
I used
we,
to
we,
ask that question on interviews too. Can you tell me a joke? Because I think it's a great question. I always tell people, look, it's a bonus. If you can't, that's fine. But if you can tell a joke, I think it's a tough question because you're on an interview. So you want to tell something that's not
offensive.
Offensive. Yes. And you don't know what's offensive.
Define offensive.
So, right, exactly. Which is a tough one. But if you can tell a joke, to me, it's the art of telling a story in a manner. And so if you can do that, I think you're a better communicator or you're showing an aptitude to communicating. Mm.
Do you know what one wall said to the other?
I love
Let's it. Go for it.
No.
Meet you at the corner.
Nice. That's a good dad joke.
That's a good dad joke.
That's a good dad joke.
That's all I have right now. Yeah. Focused on this fatherhood.
When I grow up, I want to be a mirror cleaner because I could really see myself doing that.
Okay, let's move on. We just lost the two listeners. Okay, Carlo, tell us, you make the your way to EV and AVT.
Yes.
Okay, and we've already defined what those are. So tell us about that, how you got there, and then what that is and what that entails and what you're doing now and where you see it going. I mean, that's a lot of questions baked in. That would be a lot of objections to any deposition, but we're not in deposition, thankfully. And so you can feel free to tell us all that stuff.
I'll take it one by one and let you jump in. EVs on the commercial fleet side aren't as prevalent as EVs are on the consumer side. So now you go out and you see EVs everywhere. The other day, I'm with my daughter and it's our Saturday morning routine. We go to Chick-fil-A for breakfast and then we go to the club to practice golf. So I'm sitting there and I realize there's two Teslas in front of me and one in back of me and I'm sitting in my EV. So it's four EVs in a row. So it's gaining momentum on the consumer side. Like it's close to hitting 10% of vehicle sales. It's a big number. But on the commercial fleet side, because of the weight of the batteries, because of the expense, it's not as prevalent, but it's starting. You have traditional OEMs starting to come out with some nice vehicles, both in light duty, medium duty, even heavy duty tractors and yard tractors that are in the yard moving trailers around. So you have four different classes that now all of those classes have vehicles. And now there's multiple options with original equipment manufacturers like Daimler or Mercedes-Benz USA, Freightliner, those big vehicle makers. And sometimes even within an original OEM manufacturer, also known as an OEM, there's multiple models in classes. Ryder started to test and demo early on EVs 2017, 2018, but it was non-traditional OEMs. Now that in 2022, we have these traditional OEMs bringing product and our customers need more help. We have a lot of companies that have sustainability goals and targets. We have a lot of companies that see the operational benefits of saving money on fuel, saving money on maintenance, which comes with EVs. Now it's gaining some momentum. So Ryder, late in 2022, decided to formally start an EV product, an EV business. And that's when I come in and I am asked to lead and head this product and this business. So there was luckily already a few people spending time on this, really smart and great people. I was able to expand that team. We received budget to expand that team to about eight or so, where we now have people that are focused and specialists with charging and infrastructure and grants and incentives and all the things you need in the ecosystem to support an EV business. We started late 2022, kind of breaking that out. And then in 2023, last year, almost a year ago in May, we were at the big ACT Expo in California, and we launched our formal bundled solution and industry first called Ryder Electric Plus. And we've got videos on LinkedIn, and I would love everyone to go check that out on my LinkedIn or Ryder's LinkedIn, and you could see some more details. But that's but what is brought
that?
Me to
that. Yeah, what is that solution? If you can describe it a little bit, send people, obviously, and we can put it in the show notes too, where people can go to see it. But describe it for us. Like, what is that solution that Ryder's working on?
So Ryder traditionally leases vehicles and we bring in maintenance, right? So it's a choice lease bundled kind of service with lease and maintenance. Now with Ryder Electric Plus, it's an industry first solution where we're bringing in electrification advisory services and that has teeth to it. It's not just, hey, we advise you to buy this vehicle this is how we could do it. There's tools, there's resources, there's a team that's focused on that. And we're looking at analytics, we're looking at their dwell time when the vehicle's sitting to see when we could charge it, how much time do we need, what type of vehicle do they need based on their mileage. We're looking at their charging and infrastructure requirements and where they could put it, doing site assessments, looking at grants and incentives that are available, looking at maybe some emission reduction potential with our environmental services team. That's electrification advisory services. Then you throw in the actual charging hardware that we could put in as a service. So charging as a service. So now you have your vehicle lease rate, but you also have, you could bring in charging for a monthly rate and then telematics, your vehicle tracking, your battery level tools that your fleet manager uses. And then maintenance. So that whole bundle of those five components, again, electrification advisory services, the vehicle, the charging and the infrastructure, the telematics and the maintenance, bundling that in. So you could go to Ryder. So you have one contact at one cost. You could have one contract package that has everything.
Cool. What an exciting time to be leading a team in such a growth area. So you're leading this new, essentially brand new technology. I know EVs have been around for a long time, but it's really, really exciting.
Oh, it's great. And it's a startup within a big Fortune 500
you're
company.
Right.
You have the best of both worlds where you're able to start something up. We have an excellent chief marketing officer, head of new products, and we're able to do these things at Ryder, but you have the support of the Fortune 500 company. And it's an industry and a sector that is exciting because you're working. But then when you go home and you're with kids, when you're with family, you're with loved ones, you could kind of share some of the things you're doing for the environment and for sustainability and for this earth. And so our vision is safeguard our earth. And our mission is making EVs an easy solution to adopt for our customers that are looking to electrify their fleets.
Obviously, there's so many sort of issues to get over, as you talked about. But one is obviously making sure that there's enough battery life to go a pretty decent distance. And then how fast can you charge that, right? Because any minute that a truck is down is a lost minute. Other than obviously the truckers that take a break and they sleep or whatever it is. But can you charge enough to get to the next location so that whatever you're doing is moving? If you're using whatever fleet you have, if it's at your facility, that's easy, right? That's easy to plug in right there.
Over the road is the challenge.
Over the road is tough.
And you're hitting on the barrier of heavy duty and one of the big challenges of heavy duty. And that's why our focus and our customers' focus has been more on the light duty. Because with light duty, you have a lot of dwell time. You're coming back to the home base.
Right. Plug in and fine.
We have some customers, check this out. They're charging at a 7-Eleven using DC chargers, their commercial vans. They have a couple vans, one they take every day to charge. Another one they take every other day because it has a bigger battery pack and their mileage, they're able to run it. So that's an interim solution. They're working on getting their infrastructure. But the point you brought up, that's why light duty is more of the focus.
Even cars, though, I would say need to move fast. Like, it's got to be faster, right? You pull into a gas station, it takes you how long to fill up your gas tank? It should be the same at some point, I would imagine.
And Tesla's doing a great job with their supercharger network because it doesn't take that long to charge.
It's gotten better for sure.
Yes, it's gotten better. And then now, so Tesla, their charging standard is NACS. I think it's North American Charging Standard it might stand for. So that NAS standard has won. So now I think it's like 18 OEMs have transitioned to this charging standard.
So, Tesla's becoming the standard.
Yes.
Yeah,
and that's more for that J1772 standard. That standard is the one that's transitioning. There's still kind of the heavy duty standard. And then there's going to be a megawatt standard. But Tesla, by the way, what's exciting, Tesla has a semi-tractor.
Yeah, they've been working on that for a while.
PepsiCo and Frito-Lay run. And just recently, there's another fleet that had some press on testing out the unit. Ryder also has some deposits and reservations that going back to 2017, 2018, where we're excited about eventually having that in our fleet, either for us or for our customers. But if Tesla's able to figure it out on the Class 8 side, I think it's going to help our other large partners like Freightliner and Navistar and that heavy duty space, all that competition in the entire village, I think is going to help the consumer and those commercial fleets. So it's exciting because you're able to see what some of these suppliers have done on the consumer side, whether it's GM or Mercedes-Benz USA, and then also Tesla, if they're able to have some of that success on the commercial side, I think it's going to work. It's going to work in the commercial side.
And it'll help the consumer side too. Because the technology
there's overlap.
So fast and so exciting.
Yeah.
Great stuff. Carlo, thank you.
No, thank you
for sharing your wisdom. And I appreciate you throwing a joke in there. It wasn't really your best work. But
let's just tee up maybe when I come back. We'll do a monologue.
This might be the first time a guest has invited themselves back.
And by the way,
we would love to have
you back. I would agree with that. Yeah. We're going to have him back.
We would love to have you back. If you enjoyed this episode, show us some love. Show Carlo some love. Give us a 5-star review. Send this episode to your friends and family.
And DM Jeff.
And DM Jeff for help reviewing your resume. Now I got a new gig. And we will see you next time. Nelson.
Thanks, Carlo.
Thank you for inspiring us all to be better.
Thank you, Nelson. Jeff, you are my inspiration.
Appreciate you.
Brett, you're my boss.
Speechless.
Nelson's giving us the hand. Are you cutting us off? Goodbye.
For more information on this show and other resources, visit FastAmeron.com and connect with us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram at FastAmeron.